Luke 14. Verse 7.
We studied yesterday, or talked about yesterday, that verses 1 through 6 are a repeat of what we just read in chapter 13. So in verse 7, he put forth a parable to those which were bidden when he marked how they chose out the chief, as we said, the rooms there should be translated places of reclining, saying unto them, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room or highest resting place, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee, and him come and say to thee, give this man place, and thou begin with shame to take the lowest room. Now, we're going to talk a bit about shame. In our culture, shame and guilt are just about interchangeable in discussions of things. But shame is a totally different animal. Guilt is because you did something wrong. Shame is because you are wrong. It's you feel like you don't deserve to live. There's no facial expression for shame except bowing your head. It's a place in which something has happened or something is said that you feel like you don't deserve to be here, that you're wrong at the core. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Anybody ever felt that? All of us felt it at some point when we were kids.
Well, on a less severe level, you always feel less than.
I can't hear you.
On a less severe level, you always feel less than.
Yeah. But we all have experienced it, and without shame, it would be almost impossible to have a culture, because shame is a thing that ends up molding us in a way.
It's a person without shame, like a psychopath.
Sociopath. He's one of those paths. Let's go to Hebrews 12. The whole of Hebrews 11 is talking about faith, and then it, just to set the stage, let's start in verse chapter 11, they just finished going through all of the named people, and then he generally said, who through faith subdued kingdoms, in verse 33, sought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the enemies. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting the deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, and were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith. Notice our isn't in the book. Who for the joy, or instead of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. He despised the shame. Now, if you remember when we studied this, the word for cross was not used. It was a curse word. Many cases, people were killed and then hung on the cross to shame their families. And the whole purpose of the cross was to shame. Now, the question is, what has been done with regard to shame? We know the blood of Christ has cleansed us from guilt, and we have received forgiveness for our trespasses. We know that the sin offering, his death, was our death. But what about shame? Shame is not something you have any control over. It can come from a word, it can come from a glance. When you're in shame, there are people you don't want to look, you don't want them to look at you. So many times, there's one particular person, don't look at me that way, whenever we have a meeting. I said, I'm just looking at you with a regular way. No, you're not. But normally, even the discussion of shame makes one nervous. Anybody know, understand that? What's going on? And what did Jesus do about it? I want to read some notes that I've taken over the years. Shame reduces us to muteness, alienates us from those at hand, makes us acutely aware of ourselves as deficiency or lack incarnate. When we are ashamed, we bow our heads, not to pray, but to hide. Our dependence on others, or codependence, is rooted in an identity based on shame. Success in our culture is the measure of our worth. But even if, no matter how much the cross is preached, it seems like we're still trying to get the respect or praise of others. We want to appear worthy. Remember, there's a proverb that says, they will speak well of you when you do well unto yourself. That is a that is the trapping of a shame-based culture. They will speak well of you when you do well unto yourself. Anybody understand that? And so even if we declare and speak of our belief system, we still want to be acknowledged as having worth.
Is there a culture on this planet that doesn't do it that way?
Doesn't matter.
Well, I just wonder. I think it's that human nature question for us.
Our cherished myths in our culture is the rugged individualist, self-made man or woman. Vince Lombardi's famous quote, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Let's go back to Adam and Eve. They lived in harmony because they were not aware of themselves. They took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the first thing they recognized was they were naked and were ashamed. So they hid themselves from God. And God's famous question, who told you you were naked? Now see, that is the base of shame. Who told you you were naked? Who told you you were something wrong with you? Who told you that you had, you should be crawling into a hole? Who told you that? Where did that come from? And yet everyone here has experienced that. Does anybody respond? You feel like talking or any response to any of this?
No, who told you? I mean, the easy answer is to say that, oh, Satan told me that. No, this is the problem of, this is what you've been harping on for weeks now. Your mind is what tells you this.
Yeah.
You know, this mind that occasionally I think has some good ideas, also that piece that tells me that, you know, I'm naked or I'm inadequate or I didn't do this right or whatever.
But you had to throw that in there. Occasionally it tells me something good.
I got to find some way to keep them crawling in the hole.
Doesn't it have to do with, do you agree with that fundamentally, or you wouldn't cling to it? There's some inner knowledge.
I don't understand what you're saying there.
If you said there's two people there.
Go ahead. Fine. If you're guilty, you'll attach to it. If it's not true, you just, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but shame is the one that you will almost confess until it ends and tell it that's not you.
Yeah, but the idea is there's a violent response in you because you agree with it.
And you hide.
You defend against it if it wasn't true.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
There's a synapse between the accusation and your inner self.
That who told you you were naked? Who told you you should be different than you are? Who told you? It's the evil one, you. The one you think has good ideas.
What did Adam say? The woman made me do it?
Yeah, that's the whole point. The first... First thing that the first that's the whole point of shame or even guilt. It's self-justification.
Yeah.
Adam said, well, the woman made me do it. The woman said, the snake made me do it. Fruit of shame is a preoccupation with appearance. Cover. A need to calculate and control how and with what you present themselves to others. A life filled with stratagems, agendas, second guessing. So there's always this, not always, many times there's this, what did he mean by that? So what's here? There's no, the point of it is there's no freedom. Shame brings terrifying self-doubt, but brings an immediate attention to focus, attention away from yourself. That's what we've said. Adam said Eve did it. Eve said the serpent made me do it. The irony of shame is that...
Away or to yourself?
What?
Is it shame draws attention away or to yourself?
Well, you try to draw it away from yourself by justification. The irony or shame is hiding it makes it worse. The higher the stack of lies, the more likely to topple. We allow shame to continue in others because we're afraid if we challenge it, we'll be challenged. We spent many, many months on shame, both in bananas and in whatever we called elders meeting. I forgot.
Stealth.
As a body, we must break that cycle. The way out, and the only way out, is the cross. Now, you know that the fruit of shame being overcome is your ability to laugh at it. And that's what, as I said, what the first century most dreaded about the cross was its shame. It was reserved for the worst in our society, or for, in a society, child molesters, etc., etc. It was deliberately public, and everything was done to heighten its disgrace. The word for cross was a vulgar word in ancient Rome, not used in polite society. And here's the formula that was used at that time for crucifixion. The executioner was ordered. He said, "Executioner, bind his hands, veil his head, and hang him on the tree of shame." Many times the condemned were killed before they were crucified. Even after death, they were liable to the shaming of their names and their families. Now it says Jesus endured the shame. He endured the cross, excuse me, by despising the shame or disregarding the shame. Now let's go and look and see what he did. Go to Mark chapter 15. Shame binds you. And what religion does, religion, the word for religion means to be bound with a metal, it's I can't even remember what it is, but it's like being bound tightly with some metal structure. That's the word for religion. And religion then only, it doesn't cure the shame, it hides it more, right? So let's see, let's look at verse chapter 15, let's start. And straightway in the morning, the chief priest held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council or synagogue, Sanhedrin, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. So the shame binds us, he was literally bound. Shame shuts us up. We become mute. And verse 3, and the chief priest accused him of many things, but he answered them nothing. Shame makes us fear we will be rejected. He is rejected. Pilate asked him again, saying, answerest thou nothing? Behold how many things they witness against thee. But Jesus yet answered nothing. So Pilate marveled. Now at the feast he released unto them one prisoner, whom that they desired. And there was one named Barabbas, which lay bound with them that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had ever done unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, will ye that I release unto you the King of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priests moved the people, that they should rather release Barabbas unto them. And Pilate answered and said again unto them, What will ye then that I should do unto him whom you call the King of the Jews? And they cried out again, crucify him. Then Pilate said unto them, why, what evil have ye done? And they cried out more exceedingly, crucify him. And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium, and they together with the whole band. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it about his head and began to salute him. Hail, King of the Jews. And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him, bowing their knees, worshipped him. And when they had mocked him, let's go down to verse 13 or 14. Well, that's, he's rejected, and they rejected him when they yelled, crucify him, crucify him. We were afraid of being mocked. He was mocked. So let's look at that.
15?
No, never mind. I've lost my place. Oh yeah, in verse 20. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple from him and put him his own clothes on him and led him out to crucify him. And they compelled one Simon, a Cyrenian, who passed by coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. And they bring him unto the place Golgotha, which being interpreted, the place of the skull. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them, with every man should take. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. And the superscription of his accusation was written over the King of the Jews. And with him they crucified two thieves, one on his right hand and the other on his left. And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, he was numbered with the transgressors. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their hands and saying, ah, thou that destroyest the temple and build it in 3 days, save thyself. I can't even hardly read this stuff. Just consider for a minute who this was. All things were created by him, and for him everything exists. And yet he couldn't use any powers that he had. His only power was obedience. And had he not done this, we would be hopeless. But obedience must be full. It can't be partial. You must, and I'm sorry I have to say it, you must come to a point where you live by faith alone. Where you just throw away any natural talents that you might have. Does that communicate at all? Just think of him. He created everything. And here he is hanging on a cross, being rejected and mocked by fools. And even by God. Why hast thou forsaken me? And as he is in this world, so are we. Jesus makes us, shame makes us powerless. We feel powerless. Shame is fear of abandonment. He was abandoned. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? His enemies use shame in an attempt to destroy him. They succeeded. He was profoundly discredited. His mission was shown as a sham. His followers scattered. He was a total failure. Shame had the last word and defined him. And his words are scorned and cursed. Satan tries to get us to the resurrection by hiding the shame. That's why we so desperately want to believe that we can still use part of our talents, part of our abilities, instead of abandonment and living by faith alone. Desire to our own detriment to hear that the resurrection obliterates the shame of the crucifixion.
You can imagine the state of the disciples and believers during that transition of what shame was put on them who had given all to it and believed, followed. Mixed with love, because they loved him. Now they're ashamed by him.
Our central self-deception is that successful individuals are autonomous and do not need others. Therefore, shame must be denied. It must be hidden. Then we are protected from trust in and vulnerability to others. Gospels see Jesus' shame and his weakness as the preeminent revelation of God's power, yet we try to do everything we can not to be there. We must bear the cross and its shame. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross. Those two are summary commands. Follow me is the fruit of that, of obedience to those two commands. But you can't abandon yourself if you don't know that Jesus Christ is in you. Let's go to John 12. John sees this as nothing less than his glory and his lifting up. Verse 30 of John 12. Jesus answered and said, "The voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of the world be cast down, or cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." Thus he said, signifying what death he should die. Paul said that Jesus became the shameful curse. Let's go to Galatians 3. Verse 13. Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, "Cursed is every one that hangeth on a tree," that the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. We must bear the cross and its shame. We are not ashamed of Jesus before men, he will not be ashamed of us before God. Our hope is that Jesus bore the shame and shamed it. Shame was crucified and disarmed, publicly stripped of its malignity. I want you, if you would, to over the next day until we meet again, just be aware of what shame does to you and be ready to confess some of it. You've heard the story before, but I had whooping cough and double pneumonia at the same time when I was 6 and 7. And one of the fruits of whooping cough is that you can't control your bowel movements, because when you cough so much, then the bowels moved. And my dad made fun of me in front of his friends for being 6 or 7 and not being able to, and had to wear a diaper. I forgot totally about that in my life. But all my life, I could not stand any scatological humor. It just was offensive to the worst point. But in one of the meetings that we had, I'm sure some of you were there, I remembered that issue with my father. And that intense, mind-bending shame of that moment. Now, every one of us have had this kind of thing. But I promise you, in order for the body to move any further, you must see that the shame has been shamed and crucified, and that it cannot, you can't hide it anymore. And we didn't talk about any of these things for 13 years. The reason is it took that long, in my mind, for those that went through it to trust the others. And that's the big thing. You're afraid that you'll be, if you reveal yourself and these issues, you'll be totally rejected. And so you'll hide it and hide it and hide it and hide it. So please, let the Spirit open you up and let it be confessed and seen. I promise you that what you think is darkness will be light to someone else. And it'll be your freedom. Anybody have any comments?
I just realized I'm ashamed of hiding my shame. It's like it builds on itself.
The cross should create a community of people who no longer are afraid of being defined and destroyed by shame and can admit their failures and allow their neediness. Only self-acknowledged sinners can admit their own shame. Think on these things. Anybody have anything else?